Welcome to the Touring for Purpose podcast. This is Mingo, your host. This is actually part two of a conversation that we had with Ted Vaughn. Ted is an insanely wise mentor of mine, and this is the second part of our conversation together on breakthroughs in leadership. Give it a listen. As a more seasoned leader,
yeah,
what are you looking for in a young apprentice or somebody who you're looking to give a shot to? I think of like people who are writing resumes today, trying to figure out how to present themselves best to an organization or maybe an employer.
Yeah.
You're somebody who slingshots people forward. So what are you looking for?
So, man, you know, I've never been asked this question, but it's a great question. This is raw. This is unprocessed.
Yeah.
Number one for me, and let's just assume
skinny jeans.
Let's just assume faith in Christ.
All of those exist.
Yeah, you know, you're not, you know, in prison. Although if you are in prison, there's hope. But my point is, I would say, assuming that some of the basics are met, number one, hustle.
Hustle.
The dream is free. The hustle is sold separately. I am so tired of young leaders that have passion and no ethic, discipline, or...
Come on. I just was talking about this legitimately. Everyone can develop an appetite, but few people are willing to go make the kill, right?
Whatever. Pick the metaphor, but hustle. Work your ASS off for whatever it is, which would lead me to number two. If you don't have passion or conviction for something...
Yeah.
I don't think you'll have hustle.
Huh.
I think that leads to apathy.
So you have to you have to really define and land on the thing that you're fired up about
in that moment. You know, Lord knows in my life there've probably been 15 to 20 things that have kept me hustling and passionate, and God's used that to bring me to where I am today. So don't feel like you have to
claim one and then call it for life.
Bro, come on. Yeah. That'll just lead everybody to shut down.
Yeah, that's so unrealistic.
Live in the moment.
Yeah.
What is the thing that God's called you to do? Be passionate, you know, at the Rock. Year one, it was make this place healthy.
Yeah, that's good.
My passion was health, and that was all I was focused on. Year two, it was, you know, but
so on
over
so forth,
over 4 years at The Rock, we got healthy, built a TV program, went multi-site,
developed
changed the brand, changed the worship culture.
Yeah,
I mean, the amount of change that happened at The Rock in 4 years is ridiculous.
Yeah, well, and I'm assuming that you could probably apply the same principle to all the other churches that you're now spending your time with, is you're looking for hustle.
Yeah.
You're looking through the ranks, and it doesn't matter if you're executive or associate or the high school guy, you're identifying who's willing to like get their skin in the game.
I'm working with a church in Dallas right now, and what gives me so much hope is the senior pastor, who is maybe 60, has more hustle and passion and fire than anybody else on his staff, even though he is wrestling through his own crisis of, am I the right guy? Do I have what it takes for the next season? Man, I have more, as I've helped that church get clear on vision, strategy, mission, I've got more hope and passion for them because of that senior pastor at the age of 60 having hustle and conviction. Matters way more to me than education. I mean, you should be a constant learner,
right?
But college degrees, they're great. They've never been more important, and they've never been less important.
So you're saying it's not the definitive thing. You're looking for somebody who's got a degree in XYZ.
It's helpful.
Yeah.
It's important. I believe everybody should pursue higher education.
You got daughters coming through the
ranks. Yeah. I'm just saying your graduate or undergraduate degree has never been more important and less important at the same time.
Oh, we got a question. Monty asking you a question right now. He's asking about skill. So he identifies it. Conviction, hustle, passion, but what about skill? So prior knowledge. I was asking this, I was navigating this earlier today with a young leader I just met named Vince. I asked him straight up to his, like directly across the table, what's your skill set? Because all the passion, all the hustle, there's got to have a little bit of experience to play the card game, right? To play in the game.
Yeah, absolutely.
How much experience, though? Because I was never a young adult pastor, and I just went in, and we bumped our way through it. You, never being a business owner, you're bumping your way through it. So, I mean, Monty, maybe you've got something that you want to add to the conversation. I'll nail it out for you, but
well,
how much skill?
I mean, listen, if we're talking about skill, I believe skill and education are often very different products.
Okay.
So I would say, you know, let's take the case of worship. I mean, Monty, president of Slingshot Group, where working with young leaders, especially in a worship context, regularly. By the way, Slingshot Group is the nation's leading coaching and staffing firm.
www.slingshotgroup.com.
I believe in Slingshot with all my heart, mind, soul, and spirit.
Excellent plug.
But
excellent
let me just plug. Say, I do think skill matters. And I think I would put that back in the category of hustle and passion.
Okay.
If you're a worship leader and you hustle and have conviction and passion, I guarantee you skill will follow.
That's good.
So I'm absolutely a believer in skill. I would actually say invest in your skill and your trade as much as you invest in your education and degree.
What's going to be the biggest pitfalls for emerging leaders in the next 5 years, in your opinion? What is going to be the thing that's going to keep us from making the most significant impact in the local ministry?
Wow. What's the most significant, or what are some challenges that will keep young leaders from making
the most impact in the local ministry? And the reason why I'm asking this is because I keep hearing young leaders say, you know what, I'm going to do it without the church.
Yeah,
I'm just going to go find a way.
I would say as a broad brushstroke, number one will be arrogance.
Okay.
I think going back to that idea of inquiry versus advocacy, I think sometimes the hustle and the passion, if coupled with arrogance,
it gets sour real quick.
Yeah. And God is a patient God who knows he wins in the end and doesn't need us, our plant, or our church to win.
Yes, this is good. This is good.
The kingdom of heaven, the bride of Christ, is not threatened if your church or your plant or you fail. God's very patient with us.
In our efforts.
Yes.
In our ideas.
So I think I would say the number one pitfall will be arrogance. And I think arrogance, there's something about Seth Godin and a lot of the bloggers and the voice of today's millennial, which I love those guys, but I think sometimes they're so pithy and so in your face, and so it can lead us often to a posture that is not humble and not asking more questions to understand and not receiving the wisdom from those who have gone ahead of us, even though their ways, clothing, or style might be antiquated to us.
Yeah, that's good.
So I would say that that's probably the biggest one for me is arrogance. I think number two would be, and maybe this is a byproduct of arrogance, thinking that we can do it without building on the shoulders of those who have gone before us.
Yeah, that's good. Well, I mean, you would be at such a disadvantage if you didn't take the opportunity to stand on someone's shoulders. Yeah. I would argue that I would like to see more senior, seasoned leaders invite somebody to stand on their shoulders.
No disagreement. Yeah. I mean, I've yet to work with a church that would say they are not a developing culture, but very rarely do I find a church that has a strategy program to develop people.
Aimed at that.
I think it's sometimes by nature of being a church, we just think we're doing that.
And it might be hard to articulate it because it's so unique in the moment. You don't say, here's the framework for how we're going to let the next generation stand on our shoulders. I think it's opportunity by opportunity. You go, I think I trust this kid. I'm going to bring him on tour with me. Or I get a sense that, you know, I see his passion. I see the hustle. I'm going to give him a shot. Certainly, you've done that to me in several contexts where I'm now hoping and realizing that Ted stood in front of the bus for me.
Yeah.
I have to make sure it doesn't run over both of us. And I'll do my due diligence to make that work.
Yeah. You know, a couple of quick memories for me. One, when I was at my older daughter's college, I don't know, what do they call it? College orientation.
Yes.
The college president or dean made a statement to the parents. He said, how many of you today are working in fields that are directly related to your undergraduate degree? Maybe 10% of the room raised their hand. And then he said, so what you need to realize, right, is over 40% of your kids, of the kids that are represented by this class, will be working in fields that today don't exist, right? So his point was,
and transplant that to the church.
Yes.
And that becomes a almost frightening reality.
Which goes back to the idea, right, of, you've heard me say this before, the number one investor in wind technology, big oil.
Yeah.
because big oil doesn't want to get left behind.
They don't
want to
be antiquated.
When the world changes, right? Yeah. So they're investing the heaviest in what's next. I want to see that in the church.
That's really good.
I want to see the existing institution with the resources investing in what's next, because they don't want to be left out of the game.
Yeah. And that helps the whole church move forward
in
a great stride, not just one generation of it versus the other.
And again, it's not because God's kingdom is threatened if we don't do this. God will win, whether it's through young, arrogant church planters going out and doing their thing. But I think it's better for them and for us.
Yeah. Wouldn't it be such a better story done together?
Yeah.
And you know, that it convicts me, because I speak almost to a default on this generation versus that generation, disregarding the fact that we still belong to the same body.
Frankly, I love seeing you at Purpose Driven, taking something that has been around now for decades, revitalizing it, giving it a fresh, new audience.
Running in
audience.
A ghetto 20-year-old RV.
You're innovating like nobody else could in a role, and you're building on the shoulders of what Rick started so many decades ago.
Yeah.
And it's awesome.
And you know what? I would have never had the confidence to step into that potential had there not been an advocate in the middle. So I would say to a listening audience, be certain that there are great and healthy and wise and level-headed advocates around you.
Oh my God.
If you're trying to make a serious step into your next whatever.
Even if you're not, just don't live your life without people older and wiser than you speaking into your life regularly.
And that has to be a live person. You can't be reading Facebook articles saying like, now Simon Sinek is my mentor.
Right. No, I live streamed Danny Stanley.
Yeah, absolutely.
No. Listen, if it were not for Chris Nichols, Jim Moriarty, guys like Monty and Stan Endicott, there's just no way I would have the wisdom, opportunities, and experiences that I've had.
That's great.
Those guys are my bumpers.
Is there a sending piece of advice that you would give, just based on what you've traveled so much, you're seeing churches wrestle with certain things. I'm guessing succession is one of those things. What would you like to send off? And you know, we're not speaking to churches; we're speaking to the leaders and the volunteers and the people inside of them.
All right,
we're talking to entrepreneurs. Give me your give me Ted's thing. What have you been harping on and holding on to in the last, let's say, month?
Yeah, this is probably going to go back a lot further for me, but maybe this is just a general theme for how I approach my work, my coaching, my development of leaders, my own life. But it goes back to the parable of the mustard seed.
Okay.
Matthew 13, I think. I should know that.
Yeah. So, you're going to get busted if it's not.
But, you know, in the Gospels, it talks about... But the reason I love the parable of the mustard seed is because Jesus likens God's kingdom to something that the religious law of the day had outlawed. So an agricultural community listening to Jesus, hearing him talk about a weed that's been outlawed by the spiritual authority of the day, yet it's intentionally planted and grows into something so huge that it...
The mustard seed.
Yeah, right. So it's the parable says that a man took mustard seed, intentionally planted it, and it grew into a tree. So if I put myself in the context of an agricultural good Jew listening to this parable...
This parable, yeah.
I'm being told that God's kingdom is something that we've outlawed but planted intentionally, and it grows into such a huge weed that it disrupts everything, all my crops, my garden, and that's God's kingdom.
It's a disruptor.
It's a disruptor, yeah. I think the more we can allow God, through tension, through struggle, through to be a disruptor, the more we win. I think part of our faith, part of our evangelical ideas... sometimes I think tries to protect us from tension, protect us from, but the more I look at scripture, the more I see God saying, actually, my kingdom is a disruptor, a challenger. On your best day, I still have more room and growth for you.
Man, that's going to be a tough one to wrestle with, certainly, because you don't want to dismantle or blow up the organization you're in. So it's a...
No,
it's
I'm talking about the individual. I think that we go into ministry, into our lives, into our marriages, into our... with a perfectly planned English tea garden. And we get really upset when God shows up
and disrupts it. I get you now. Yes. And so we have to be ready for that. We have to be ready for that reality.
Yes.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
Now, that is also true for the institutional church.
Right.
Right? But what I want are leaders who are looking for the mustard seed that they can plant and who will actually celebrate the weed that grows, no matter what it disrupts.
I love where you're going, and yet I still just can't think, I can't stop thinking of, like,
it's hard.
Legalized weed in California.
Oh, my gosh.
Beep. Boop.
Yeah. We need to do a whole new podcast.
But I'm just saying, that has nothing to do with it. It's on my stupid mind. I love, though, that the bottom line is that you're anticipating a disruption. And in that disruption is the kingdom moment that propels you to whatever it is that you can't even see around the corner.
To me, the takeaway is this. God is... in your life going to plant seeds that are disruptive, that grow like a weed, that uproot the crops in the garden that you think is your plan for and whatever.
Yeah, the win. Whatever you put down as the win, God goes, listen, my kingdom turns all of this upside down.
And the beauty is that it ends, the parable ends by saying, and the birds of the field perch in its branches and take shelter.
They'll take shelter.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's like...
there's a provision in it that you can't even...
the irony there is, right, most farmers don't want birds near their crops.
Yeah.
And again, we have Jesus saying, and actually the birds that you really try and keep away with your scarecrows and such, they're going to actually take shelter. So...
you're preaching at us right now.
Counter,
you're coming at me right
now. Just saying, tension, I'm closing with tension.
This is a great circle.
There's a counterintuitive nature to how God works. And I think sometimes in our own pursuit of safety, security, predictability, success, we want our garden the way we think it should be
and
done.
And untouched and
undisrupted. And God shows up and says, actually...
yeah. So I will say this then in closing, if you're in an organization or if you're inside of a department where there is a ton of turmoil, it could be the very place where God is poised to do something huge.
And don't assume that the turmoil means you need to go.
Yeah, good. Right? Oh my gosh.
Sometimes
the
turmoil means you need to lean in and see what God has for you.
That's good. Man, and there's so much there. We might have to go to episode 2, 3, and 4 on this. We'll be doing a whole season called TED Talks.
That's brilliant.
Ted, if people want to connect with you beyond the podcast, where can they find you?
You can follow me on Facebook and Twitter at Ted Vaughn. You can go to the agency I'm a part of, historicagency.com.
Best, I'm sure you're best on a few other websites.
Slingshot Group. CDF, there's a whole bunch.
Gosh.
But bottom line is just follow me on Facebook or something.
Google and, Old World Red and you'll find
him. I don't
him.
Do Snapchat. I'm not a big Instagram guy.
Twitter. Thank you so much for your time. I hope that this encourages several leaders across several landscapes in this conversation. We'll talk to you guys soon. Share and like this podcast and subscribe and comment. That would help us a ton. I love you guys. Check out our hashtag PDC Tour or Touring for Purpose, and you can see other episodes in this stream. Love you guys. We'll talk to you soon.
See you.